Hey, y'all, it is me, Kaya, and I'm here with Jay, who could join us this week for another episode of Blow Pod. Say what's up to the people, Jay.
Hello, hello. It's good to be back.
And we got our bestie, Ryan, here today to join us because I know that I owe you guys like four episodes, but I said, instead of giving you four episodes that I owe you, why don't I just give you one really good one with one of your faves? We got Ryan here. How are you? Say what's up to the people.
What's up, blowers? What's up, Blow Nation?
Blow Nation. I love that one. That should be on the merch. Hashtag merch idea. So let's just get into it. Like, there are a bunch of news things that we can talk about that I can kind of like talk you through. A lot of you guys stayed with us from the Suck Pod, and this is some Suck related news. Sarah Snook finally talked to Variety about a few things involving the finale of Succession. And I think that it was good to hear from her because we were able to hear from the other two and we never heard from the woman behind the madness, the woman who was pulling the strings all the series. So just some highlights from the interview. She was saying about it's not a win. A lot of people like me thought that, yeah, she's having Tom's baby and Tom is now the boss, but she's going to pull the strings for Tom and basically make him a puppet. But she came out herself and said that this is not a win for, you know, her at all, for Shiv at all. She is just, again, you know, like a wife and a mother now. And she also talked about why Shiv decided at the last minute to shift over to Kendall instead of going with the original plan. She said that she doesn't think that it was premeditated because a lot of people thought that Shiv was going to do that anyway. Like, it wasn't a last minute thing. She had that on her chest all along. She was like, no, it wasn't. It was really, she thinks that Shiv last minute said that she just couldn't do it, just like in the scene. And something that solidified that she made the right choice is that immediately after, Kendall started acting a fool and, you know, lying about killing the kid and everything like that. And one last thing that I wanted to bring up was that there was a scene that was eliminated, that it was just supposed to be Shiv and Kendall kind of like fighting over a phone. And then they added last minute that all three siblings would kind of fight and get into this mess. And that's what made it in the finale. So I think that we've got all of our like questions answered from Shiv, really. I mean, I know obviously Matthew McFadden did interviews. We heard from everyone else, but she was like the last one to finally put this thing, you know, wrap it with a bow very neatly. What do you think about the Sarah Snook of it all? Like, did anything surprise you? Did you think that this is like Shiv was supposed to, you know, go in there and go by her word, but she had a secret plot all along? Or, you know, do you agree that this is a loss for Shiv? Or what are your general feelings about that, Ryan?
No, I mean, I think this is exactly who that character is and who all those characters were. So it makes sense from an audience standpoint. I was hoping for this happy little bow on it, but that wouldn't be the reality of the series at all. So it makes complete sense. And it also makes sense for Sarah to say that was in the moment for the character, because that's how insane all siblings were. The people that were like, oh, you know, Shiv, that's the one that was actually had the moral high ground. And that's actually BS as well. She's just as nutty as her brothers. And it just shows you that each one of those characters, none of them won. I didn't think her holding Tom's hand at the end, and I didn't think that signifies she won. I thought that was just, you know, in servitude of somebody else. Once again, she put herself in that position. And I would bet if that show continued, you would have dealt with her regretting that decision pretty much within that same day or week. And that's what, you know, that's the only, and the only thing that stood out else to me about that article, which I thought was great, was, you know, I think the thing that we all said is that she didn't know until the going into the table read that really truly was going to be the finale. And the creator announced it, Jesse Armstrong, at the beginning of that table read. And the only, you know, because the thing is, you're like, oh, I know exactly how it could go on. You know, the audience, you know, we know exactly how it could go on. The only thing that I would add that I could hope for in the future is that Jesse Armstrong, the creator, I hope his career tanks after this. And in well, because in 10 years, then he'll be like, no, because then in 10 years, he'll be like, you know what I was thinking? It would be helpful to revisit these characters where they I have a different take on it. Like, that's how it usually happens, is that they say they never revisit things, and then Hollywood hands them their ass in some form. And then you have Sylvester Stallone will go back to Rambo or Rocky. Like, and I, by the way, I don't think Jesse Armstrong's career is going to tank at all. He's a genius. Yeah. But for my own selfishness, I would love to pick back up with these characters at some point,
just to see where they are, especially especially in a decade, like to see where we are and to see where they are is hilarious. And like sort of like the whole Sopranos thing that people had questions and questions were answered like a long time after.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing is, do you think we'll ever get a prequel like they did with the Sopranos, where all of a sudden
or you Better Call Saul?
Yeah, like Tony Soprano as a kid or something. We see them as teenagers.
I would like to, but like as far as it goes, he's just all the characters and also the director, like they're all saying that this is it. But I never believe that this is it, because that's what they said about Game of Thrones. And then they're supposed to have a Jon Snow show. So obviously that could be open. That's the one that I would want to see most, is a prequel, as much as I would like to see what happens after. But it's like, how did you guys turn into these monsters? You know?
Yeah,
like,
money is a great motivator, which is also like the theme of Succession as well. And I think money, you know, if HBO Max or Discovery Plus or whatever they, you know, if they really start bombing, I feel like there would be a time and a place where they would throw a Brinks truck up to shows like this and go, do you have any other ideas with these characters? Like, you know, Jason, you said Better Call Saul is like a perfect idea. You know, that was, and it turned out to be good, that show.
Totally, 100%. I think, I don't know, I just lean more towards, if they were going to do anything, it would be a movie, like similar to the way they did Many Saints of Newark. I just think it's a little bit neater, and I couldn't, at least for Succession, I can't think of a single character that would fit that kind of like Better Call Saul model that was like this beloved kind of secondary character, because Succession, all of the characters kind of got their spotlight and got their moment. So I don't know.
Well,
for some reason, I think it would just be a movie. I don't know.
The great thing about Better Call Saul, though, is that Bob Odenkirk's character had a lot of great moments in Breaking Bad, but what Better Call Saul was able to do was show, wow, this emotional landscape that we had no idea that the Saul character had. So you could pick a character from Succession that we think is potentially a one-note character and then go, actually, you know, you could even do it on like the Jerry and the two other guys that were all...
Jerry, Frank, and Carl.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to Jerry, like the rise of Jerry, Frank, and Carl through the years. You know, I mean,
that would actually be a great show.
Yeah.
It's just, we have such power players that it doesn't matter who you pick, it's going to be interesting. Mm. And it's going to be something that I would automatically say yes to. Like, there are certain shows that I'm like, when they do reboots or any of it, I'm just like, you guys shouldn't touch that, you know? But this is one that if the same writers and directors are attached, touch it all you want, baby. Like, give it to them.
What about Matthew McFadden? Like, say he doesn't stay with Shiv, and you have like a Matthew McFadden, you know, like a show based around him, and you know he's dating other women. He's trying to, like, I mean, you could do it like so many different ways, but it would just be obviously completely different. And they stuck the landing after four seasons. I thought that was a really, really well done final season. Mm-hmm. So you would risk, you know, just like even The Sopranos, that Many Saints of Newark, you know, didn't get well reviewed. Like, you risk sometimes ruining the initial thing that you became a legend for.
I definitely agree. Just with Succession in general, I think that we should expect it to come back down the road. I don't see that, like, something... With Game of Thrones, right, we got all the answers, kind of. Like, even though we didn't like those answers, just like we don't like some of the things that happened with Succession, it wasn't as open-ended as Succession was and is, especially because we see Kendall on the park bench and, you know, Roman has this, like, smile that is evil, but something that we would love to see what happens after that. And obviously, we wanted to know, even if it's the show about how Shiv and Tom's kids grow up. Like, I would love to see that too. Oh, all the kids. Actors.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Just seeing like all the kids, like where they, like, what do they become? Especially because those are the characters we've really only just seen a tiny glimpse of, you know, like how does watching your father fall into a pool and just kind of like sink essentially
affect you,
you know, 10, 15 years from then when you're just getting started in your career or even further than that, you know, what do the kids do when they've really been sheltered their whole life and now they've inherited some kind of fortune and what does that look like?
Exactly.
Imagine if they grew up to be like terrible people, like worse than Shiv and Kendall. I think that could be a possibility.
Well, I think that's the kind of one of the messages of the show is that when you grow up with that kind of insane wealth, you really are on. I mean, it's really, I think, very, very rarely you grow up to be an amazing person with a lot of money. I think it's your, like, money kind of changes who you are and it's like at a core level. And none of those, you know, none of the main players, Shiv and all those guys, like you said, you're not going to have, they're not going to ever be happy. Like, they're just not. Like, I mean, Kendall, of course, we thought was going to off himself. And I think there's a part of me that still thinks, man, that guy, you know, I would be curious to see if he does even survive the next 5 years of life.
Yeah. Oh man, I just love that show. It's making me miss it already. So let's just go on to some casting news, allegedly, because I've heard so many different names thrown around. It's not the full cast just yet, but apparently for the Fantastic Four reboot, it's been rumored that they have 90% casted Vanessa Kirby as Sue Storm and Joseph Quinn, we know him from Stranger Things as Johnny Storm. Are you Fantastic Four fans?
I mean, I wasn't fans of either of the movies that came out about them. I watched both of them and I read the comics as a kid. I mean, I Marvel, I'll watch kind of anything Marvel does, but it's not one of those, like, it's not Batman to me where I'm always like, oh my God, I can't wait. The casting news is always exciting, but we also know with casting news is that even if you don't like the casting, usually I was thinking about like Ryan Gosling as Ken and everybody was like, had their panties in a bunch about like, he doesn't look like Ken. And I'm like, first off, Ken's a flipping doll. And second off, now he's getting raves for his portrayal of Ken. Like anybody disliking casting news is such a waste of time until the movie comes out. But I like the excitement of casting rumors and news.
Yeah. I like that. Like, I could talk about it all day, and I definitely like to get upset about them because it's just like some things are like looking you straight in the face. Like, with this, I don't have a strong reaction to because I'm not really a Fantastic Four girly. I do think that the timing of this news is very suspicious considering they just finished with Secret Invasion, which had so much potential, and the finale was just a fucking flop. Like, and especially because you had all these power players as actors. You have Samuel L. fucking Jackson, you have Emilia Clarke, the first big thing that she's done after Game of Thrones, and they basically just threw all that potential away. So now they're like, oh, don't leave us. We have, you know, this guy from Stranger Things, we have him as, you know, Fantastic Four. You know, the girl from Mission Impossible, well, she's also gonna be on there too. So that's how I'm feeling about that. What about you, Jay? Do you like Fantastic Four or Marvel, you know, movies?
I'm a big fan of Marvel and I grew up reading all the comics. Same thing with Fantastic Four. I always looked at the Fantastic Four though as like the stepchild, like the red stepchild of the Marvel universe, in that there were so many different attempts to like make something from it and nothing truly has ever hit in the way that like Avengers was able to capture like pop culture. So, you know, it makes sense that they're giving this another go, and great that they're, you know, bringing in talent from like the Stranger Things franchise. But I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, again, casting news is kind of early. It's kind of early to see, but I don't know. We'll see if this is a bigger, you know, home run than previous attempts at this story.
I think Marvel need. I mean, my main concern right now is just Marvel overall. Is that when you're this successful for this long, but you have all of these different phases, And then the story gets so big, and then you also introduce the metaverse. Like, I want the metaverse to be done for all things. Like, I just, when you have so many options, it kind of waters down any potential actual drama. If you lose a character in one universe, don't worry, they're still in this other metaverse as a I think that's exciting and fun for a second, but then I do think it kind of takes away from the overall heaviness of something. You want, if a character dies, you want to feel that. You don't want to be like, don't worry, they'll come back in the metaverse. You don't want, like, I think that's the stuff where the story, especially for Marvel, since they've gone this hard and this strong and this successfully, to keep on that, like, you got it. And also you're now building such a mythology, just even like with Secret Invasion, which very few Marvel fans even turned up for, is that you got to like then go like, don't go too deep into the mythology. Start telling one, go back to telling actual stories involving just these superheroes. If you're doing a Fantastic Four movie, make it a Fantastic Four movie and don't add in multiverses. You know, like a little bit of that is fine, but we want to like these characters for them first and not what piece do they fill in a greater mythology.
Yeah, this is like their third go at it. So it's like three strikes, you're out, babe. How many Fantastic Fours do you want me to like be pirating at this point? Because it's going to be the third one. And I think that when they casted the guy from The Office, he seemed like a great...
John Krasinski, when he popped up in Doctor Strange. I thought that was a great... Sliced.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, damn, that to me was actually pretty exciting. And he looked good in the costume.
Right. And we saw him. And then just to think, like, I know that they're husband and wife and, you know, maybe they shouldn't do everything together. But Emily Blunt, is that her name? Yeah, that's his wife. Emily Blunt, she'd be a fantastic, like, Mrs. Fantastic.
She was. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we'll just see what happens. I think that they just need to pick a direction and go with it instead of just saying, okay, we have the multiverse and what's happening now, even before the strike happened, was that I think it was Bob Iger, the head of Disney, he's like, well, Marvel, you know, he's kind of excused it as we have so many things now, we have so many shows that it kind of, we might have lost vision, lost importance, we lost all this because we have so much of the content, so we're slowing that down. I agree to that to a certain extent, but it's like when you're making even different decisions that are outside of the comic, like it's okay to change it a little bit. But I think what you need are these good writers that you are refusing to pay and things like that. So maybe invest more in a team that has a vision rather than saying that the quantity is the problem. It's always the quality and not the quantity. But I think we should really talk about what we all came here for. The thing that is leading pop culture and should be, I don't know, receiving many, many Oscars and Emmys and all of the awards, in my opinion, in Kaya Land, is Barbie. And both of you have seen Barbie. I have waited for JC Barbie just to get him fresh off of it. And I want to let both of you know, before you guys start, it doesn't matter how you feel about this show, that you both are Knuff.
Is it Knuff or Knuff?
No, you don't say Knuff. You have to say Knuff.
Knuff.
It just rolls off the tongue. And like you just repeat that to yourselves. So I just want your, like, since you saw it, the most recent, Jay, you had that first take reaction. What do you think about Barbie?
Oh, man. It was amazing. It was really, really good. It was surprising. I thought they did a really good job making it fun and interesting and visually incredible. The sound was great. And the themes throughout it were awesome. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I didn't expect that this movie would be this way, you know. And when I initially read headlines that they were coming out with this movie, I was like, okay, you know, is it going to be for kids? Is it going to be like really kind of dumbed down? And it was the exact opposite. It's really a film for everybody, people of all ages. And I feel like everybody should go and see it.
I think they have. I feel like everybody has officially gone and seen this movie, which is exciting.
100%.
I'm just so excited about it. And I think that even before, which surprised me, well, I don't know if I should have been surprised or not, like, much of the right was able to see this movie and, like, trash it before it got to the masses because of the freaking, you know, the SAG strike and things like that. So a lot of people that, you know, are on the left or, you know, a part of SAG in general, like, they weren't able to go to the final premiere and see these preview shows or whatever. And it came out, like, I was reading about it and I was nervous. I'm like, oh my God, is it really, like, bashing men this terribly? And then I went to see it and I'm like, this is actually, like, everyone could, like, you know, use the messaging that's in here.
No,
it was crazy. Because I saw 30 and 40 and 50-year-old men literally saying that they are taking the masculinity out of everything. They are literally doing the testosterone. They're taking the testosterone out of men. It's just male bashing. It's nothing. And I'm like, yo, they didn't even paint females in a good light either. Like, they were actually pretty, like, well-rounded. They had a weird Barbie. We called that bitch Weird Barbie right to her face.
Weird Barbie,
and
yeah.
We talked about how it's fucked up to call her Weird Barbie. And the Kens even got a happy ending, whereas the main Barbie didn't even want to be a Barbie anymore. So I'm like, how are you getting from this messaging?
Imagine
all of this.
Go ahead. Imagine spending money. I know this is my whole, I mean, like, it's so funny. I'm a dude. I was not offended in the slightest. And also, I just find it funny for the people that already knew they were going to go get offended to pay a movie or to even show up at a screening just to get upset. Like, that's part of their gig, too. I mean, the people that were being vocal about it, the Ben Shapiro's and stuff, that's part of their bit. Like, that's his carrot top kind of, like, prop comedy is that, yeah, okay, Ben, get that movie. But the silliness of that, if you kind of pull back the lens, is like, wow, how sad that you went to do, I mean, like, truly wanted to be upset about this so you could propagate that up, you know, that anger on top of your audience that wants to be angry about something too. And in the movie itself, you know, if you watch the movie, it doesn't bash men. It makes some very clear points about men. Also, this is a clear story about women or about Barbies, about both. And that's not threatening. If you're a male and you get threatened by Barbie, there's a lot of inner work that you probably haven't done yet. And you might not ever be able to do that work, but it makes me sad because it's like, man, you know, like, be strong enough in yourself to know that you shouldn't see this movie if you're going to get upset that easily. And if you get upset that easily, I genuinely worry, like, it must be a tough day-to-day life for you, because what man already, if you're such a man, are going like, I got to see that Barbie on the first day. Like, no, those kind of guys aren't seeing Barbie to begin with. So it's interesting. It's just people wanting to be upset. And I think it takes away from the actual power of the movie, which I just think was well done. Unique idea. You know, the fact that they were able to put in some basic ideas about feminism, do a really unique, like, the way it was shot was amazing. Use of music, color, casting, all of these things. I never got threatened once. And I'm kind of a Matchbox 20 fan, and I even love the use of Matchbox 20. I was like, I thought it was hysterical. Ryan Gosling killed it. I mean, it was just kind of top to bottom. I'm excited to see it again. And also, congratulations. I mean, after this weekend, it'll be the first female-directed movie to pass $1 billion worldwide. And, man, thank God we're getting people back to the movie theaters. And the success of this made Oppenheimer successful as well. Like, that's what we need, is people to be excited about movies.
Exactly. And I don't know, like, there was this, which is why I shouldn't be on Facebook anymore, but there's this guy I went to high school with, and he literally doesn't do, okay, he was very into TV production, and he's talented at it. I will never strike that down. I'll give him that. Like, he goes off when he does those wedding photos, but, like, and it's no shade. I'm not trying to be shady, but he, like, does really good wedding photos. But he loves, like, film and things like that, but he never goes on Facebook to talk about a movie. And this man put a full status saying Barbie movie review. Like, it was him, and he didn't have enough space on his status. So he's like, my full review in comments. And it was just like another, like, four paragraphs of how disappointed he was in Greta Gerwig, in the messaging. He used buzzwords like propaganda, woke, agenda. And I'm just like, me as a troll, I don't bother people like at all, like directly. So I was just scrolling. I was like, oh, that's interesting. But then I was scrolling and then I saw a meme that said, girl, are you the Barbie movie? Because wow, a lot of men are angry that you weren't specifically created to appeal to them. So of course he comes to my page. So that gave me free reign. So he came to my page and he was just like, oh yes, definitely Oscar worthy, definitely pandering to exactly what woke feminism is in 2023. So all I put was, you're enough. I'll leave it at that.
Wait, does this guy usually do movie reviews on his page?
No, that's my whole thing, is that you never do movie reviews, but you decided to do a movie review instead of something beautiful and, you know, like meant for like Oscar buzz and real like cinematic people, lovers of movies like Oppenheimer. I was waiting for like an Oppenheimer review or something like that. You decided that you wanted to do a review, the first review ever on your Facebook page and into the Facebook timeline. It's your first review is about Barbie. Like, it was just the most insane thing that I saw.
Did you say he was disappointed in Greta Gerwig?
Yeah.
So now I'm curious. Will you please ask him if he has enjoyed Greta Gerwig's other films like Lady Bird, Frances Ha? That's what I'm saying. How are you disappointed? If you didn't expect a little something like this from somebody like Greta Gerwig, which I think is a compliment, that's the kind of bullshit too. Because then what's sad about that is that he is just then filtering probably Ben Shapiro's thoughts and adding a little bit of his, what he calls his spice onto it. So you're pretty much just watering down talking points and trying to get some sort of attention for yourself, which then makes me sad. That's my whole thing about like social media anyways.
The most insane thing is that I said, you're enough. And like, the only thing that he can say is because I made him look so stupid with just like, I'm not going to argue with a grown man about Barbie. That's just like, I'm dying. Like, I don't have time for that bullshit. So
I don't think anybody does. Like,
I'd still let you in my Mojo Dojo Casa house. So you're quoting the movie, but you hated the movie and that the movie was just male bashing. And I was just like, you clearly loved it so much. It's okay to just say that you loved it. I feel like that was the theme. Because if you're quoting the Mojo Dojo Casa house, that means that you secretly loved it and you just don't want anyone to know.
You know they're going to do a sequel to Barbie. I mean, you know, just because obviously it made a lot of money. But what's going to be funny is that I bet there will be a character like that man that is giving reviews about Barbie or some sort of that will be a character, mark my words, in the second Barbie, because it's also Barbie's very meta. It talks about like, you know, but also woke agenda is hysterical. I struggle with coming from an acting background too, of the threat we have in every facet of our life of just representation. Like, it's just some basic representation, but that is a woke agenda. And it's like, wait a sec. No, I mean, Barbies can be like, the fact that I'm even saying Barbies can
be. We're talking about Barbies.
I'm like, that's hysterical. Like, go fucking do this to like a Star Wars movie and see how you do.
Yes.
Like, and by the way, if you really go into a Star Wars movie, your mind's going to be blown because there's like January 6 elements in Star Wars. There's like all this shit, but people will give action movies sometimes like the easiest pass, but we need to dissect a Barbie movie until Kingdom Come.
I'm going to read you the little paragraph that he made before he did his full review. The Barbie movie's powerful message of empowerment is skewered to only empower in one direction. Men have retained their empowered position over millennia, but it still feels like a great area to elevate Barbie by shortchanging the Kens. If Barbie is a feminist icon, and this is dead serious,
I love that he used millennia. I love that. That's congratulations.
Like, okay, babe. And this is the last sentence. If Barbie is a feminist icon, the message should be equality for all and not at the expense of someone else. When did she take away Ken's equality? Like, please tell me when Barbie took away Ken's equality. Like, no, she literally like had to get these bitches together. She let them fight it out. And she was like, bitch, go find your own identity. You're good
at it. But also, if you want to get into it, you could say Ryan Gosling's character, Ken, he's trying to discover what it actually means to be a man. Like these feelings that he has and his inability to express things and his wanting to take over things. And like there is this. And by the way, I found that as a dude hysterical because I thought it nailed some of it. I thought, it was like so funny. And if you are willing to say, listen, I make mistakes in life, whether you're or a male or a female, you would appreciate this. Like I was like, oh, that's so true. And like, oh, I don't experience that, but I've seen that with other people. Like, I need to see this guy review a Transformers film. Like this, I need more movie reviews from this guy.
Like, okay, if that's your first one, like, please tell me your feelings on Halle Berry's Catwoman. Like, please. Like, I don't know, like, what would satisfy you, dude? It's insane. Like, that was his first post. But
what, what drove him to do this? That's the bigger question is, like, what drove him to do this? And
right, like, who hurt you?
It is interesting because I feel like sometimes then entertainment, which, of course, is a lens through which tons of us view things, you know, it's like, just tell us you're upset how the world is going. Just tell us that, you know, like just say you're scared. You don't know how to verbalize your fear and it's easy potentially to then express how scared you are through attacking a movie like Barbie. But like, that's the truth of it. Cause like, how do you wake up one day and decide, well, this is where I lay my stake into the, like, no more. I will now no more after the Barbie movie.
And then I think that he like kind of went against his whole point by saying you're still invited to my Mojo Dojo Casa house, because then that's literally a Ken thing to say before Ken, like before the evolved Ken. Like you are being patriarchy right now.
And I bet he'll see it again. He'll see it again.
And the whole thing is that you don't need
to buy another ticket.
Yeah, like you are okay. You're okay by yourself. And I think that was a good messaging. Like it had a good message for men and women. And like, if you want to argue about the whole Barbie Land thing, like the bitch left Barbie Land and she wanted to go get a vagina. Like she didn't want to get a job. She didn't want to do anything special. She wanted to go. And her first thing to do was literally to go to the gynecologist to get a vagina. So do we want to argue about that, Mr. Barbie reviewer?
But also, you know how many bad movies out there with no point of view at all? You know, like I was just happy. Like also, I went into that Barbie, I saw it on the first day, and I still didn't really know exactly what the tone was going to be. So I was surprised. Yeah. And then I was pleasantly surprised by the end. And I was kind of like excited by that because I watched so many shitty movies that I was just excited for like a point of view, something different, something like that this was actually going to be a blockbuster movie. What a like a different kind of blockbuster movie. I thought that was refreshing. Like there's
so many things to talk about. Like even if you didn't like the messaging of it, okay, it didn't get as deep as we could have gotten deeper about how men are literally currently trying to take over women's bodies and things like that.
Yeah, right, by the way, I was waiting for somebody to say clitoris in the movie. I wanted to get that deep. Like, let's talk about our vulvas, everybody. Like, we didn't like literally, come on. Like,
it's insane. But I just want to know what your thoughts are, not just on Ken, but like Alan. How do we think everyone talks about Ryan Gosling? I think that he was amazing. I was one of the people who were like, why is this 40-year-old man being Ken? And you know what? He shut me the fuck up. He did amazing. But yeah. I wanted you guys to tell me what you think about Alan. He's just Alan, but
Alan crushed it.
So yeah.
The best comedic element. Yeah. Well, yeah, important in the plot to an extent, but also just like the best comedic element, I think, within the film, of like the way they would just subtly cut to him in the various scenes. He'd just be like standing there. And what great casting too with Michael Cera. I feel like he's like the only one that could actually pull that off. Yeah.
And it falls, like, you know, from what I've read, it falls into the actual Barbie universe, was that Alan was a discontinued doll that was Ken's like friend, you know, friend of in the Barbie universe. So I thought that was a great like use of, like they did that with the Midge character as well. Yeah. And I was like, listen, man, this was in the Barbie universe. What a fun way to actually bring this in and kind of explain who he was and the reality of the Alan character situation would be that of like, are you Ken? Like, I have to watch Ken all the time. Like, I thought it was great. Michael Cera, great casting. It was a great addition.
John Cena was also just like, he like had no lines really, but it was hilarious to see him pop up as Mermaid Barbie. I'm just like, where did you get John Cena from? And it turns out that he was like just on the same, I guess, like lot filming Fast and the Furious or whatever. I think it was Fast and the Furious. And he asked to be a part of it. He asked to be a part of it. I'm like, that is the most John Cena thing that I think that I've ever heard, especially while he's going on this comedic turn right now in his acting career. Like, he does Fast and the Furious, but he's hilarious in his funny, like, Vacation Friends. I think they're making a sequel one. And just a bunch of different movies that John Cena's in, especially like Sisters and stuff like that.
He was great in Trainwreck, the Amy Schumer movie. He was great as the boyfriend in that. Yeah.
That was his breakout role, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jason, I think he's even good like Peacemaker or whatever that character is.
Yeah,
like,
he's really funny in that. Show. Yeah. That's a great blend of what he can do.
Totally.
Do you have about 10 more minutes? Because I'm going to wrap this up. I know that you might have something to go off to, but I would just
I'm going to jump off in like 5-ish.
All right. Well, listen, thank you for joining us. If you hear Jay.
Wait, we're done?
No, not yet.
Just I was like, wait a
second. Something. I was just checking Jay's time real quick because I know you have something.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So Kevin Hart has a show that I don't think that a lot of people are watching. I think that sometimes when there's a famous person, which it comprises of a bunch of famous people, which is insane. Sometimes a clip will go viral, like when he had the guy from Avengers on there, and he was like, "Oh, I'm like 56," and Kevin Hart was like, "Damn, that one went seriously viral." But Heart to Heart in general is a really good show. Kevin Hart has a like a winery or whatever, and he does these interviews, these really specific interviews where he gets to know people who are either at the top of the game or very new to the game. And he recently had people like, you know, Sweetie, Pete Davidson, Tracy Ellis Ross, like icons on the show because he's made friends with icons, of course. But recently he had Will Ferrell, which obviously if you watched Get Hard, him and Will Ferrell has amazing comedic chemistry. And we just learned some things about like, well, I learned because he was Elf to me. But before he was Elf, like, so another generation, he was a guy from, like, SNL. So it really, like, bridged the gap for me, like, how his career went in general. Because he is an older guy, but he's unproblematic, so he looks the same. But he's had so many wins. I don't think he actually runs out of wins. Anytime Will Ferrell, who was in the Barbie movie, by the way, does something, it's usually hilarious and is successful. So he just talked about, you know, his upbringing, a normal upbringing. He talked about his SNL audition, which he did like different characters. And he talked about like the frat pack, I think they call it. The people, like a bunch of comedians that he kind of came up with, and how he thinks about comedy in general and how he approaches his like next role. I think it was like a different side of Will Ferrell because I read his interviews and he is hilarious, but just to see him and Kevin Hart go from being funny to being serious and also just learning the history of how Will Ferrell built his powerhouse, which, you know, he was teamed up with Adam McKay and, I think that went south very recently, but I don't know how.
Yeah, I know that exact story. And also to blow your mind too, is that, you know, they're the producers of Succession.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Will Ferrell and Adam McKay.
Exactly. And I don't think I've ever heard Will Ferrell talk about Succession.
I know.
But he just has like the credit for it because they have that.
Gary Sanchez Productions. Yeah, Succession originally was a half-hour comedy show, and then it switched to the hour-long format once Jesse Armstrong came in because he had been obviously fascinated with like Rupert Murdoch and Sumner Redstone and stuff like that. But yeah, Gary Sanchez produced that, which that that company is disbanded because of their feud over Winning Time, Adam McKay's HBO show, where I think Will Ferrell wanted to play John C. Reilly's role, and he never got the call for it. And that, and by the way, Adam McKay has gone on record saying he did do something wrong in that. Yeah, he fucked that up, and I think he really regrets that. And that's a shame. Adam McKay and those guys are geniuses together.
It's just sad to see that that is broken up, but hopefully they can get back together again somehow. Maybe some time has to go by. I think it happened around, like, what, 2 years ago, because they're on, like, that second season, I think, right now, second or third. It's actually airing right now, I believe, on HBO, or about to air. So what did you think about the, did you learn anything about Will Ferrell that you didn't know, or was it just solidifying things that you did know, and are you familiar of around like the comedy group that he came up with?
Well, Jason should answer because he has to leave. So maybe his answer first.
Yeah. I mean, well, first of all, I think the CEO of Mattel, we didn't even talk about that, but yeah, I mean, I think that he certainly has had a really interesting career. I don't know if I necessarily like have a specific opinion on like anything that was new, that was honestly that I learned from it. Other than that, he's like a comedic powerhouse, continues to put out like really awesome content.
So has he done, like, to you guys' knowledge, has he done anything that was serious? Like, has he ever been...
There was a string of movies that he did. I'm trying to think. They had serious undertones. What was it called? The man that was like selling everything. Sorry, one second. I'm trying to think. He's in a bunch of serious, or he tried to do serious films. I'm trying to think of what those names were.
I'm wondering, like, is he like an Adam Sandler? Like, I knew that he could do serious because he did Uncut Gems.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Not Uncut Gems. I don't know if I've ever seen Will Ferrell try to do a serious role.
I'm trying to find the movie right now because there's one movie. And he, what is that movie? I'm trying to find it. It was like early on once he started becoming successful.
It's not that I doubt that he could do one, but I just don't think that I would ever be able to take him seriously in a serious role. Just like Kevin Hart. He's hilarious, right? But when he's in his serious roles, I still don't really, even when they do well, like he did that one with, I forgot the name of it, but he did the one with the guy from Breaking Bad where he was like in the wheelchair or whatever. And it was a great movie, but it was pretty much Kevin Hart being in a serious role. And I think that it was a good movie, but I just couldn't take it seriously.
Oh yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, like I'm just like, I don't know. If you're versatile enough to do this, like you're a genius in creating characters and being hilarious. And I know that you trained for it, but I just can't take him seriously. And I think that Will Ferrell would be another one that I can't take seriously. I think he can write seriously, but he can't like act seriously. And where I saw that Adam Sandler, he can write and act seriously. Yeah. Even though like came like later in his career.
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe one day he will, but and when happens, I'll definitely watch it.
I found the movie Stranger Than Fiction in 2006 was a more serious film than he usually does. That was a serious film, and then the rest of them just seem like flat out comedies. Yeah, I mean when you're that good at like comedy, it's hard to even be seen by the audience. Oh, he did a Woody Allen film, Melinda and Melinda, back in 2004.
All right, guys, I gotta drop. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Jay. Appreciate
it. Bye, dude.
Can do this. Talk Take to care. You next time. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, I think that in Stranger Than Fiction, it says that Queen Latifah was in it, and I'm like, that was when she was in her heyday.
Yeah, no, I think also he knows, like, I think he truly, and you see this in the Kevin Hart interview, which I thought was great because you don't get to see him be, you know, because even when he's on talk shows, he does bits, you know, he'll like come in and do bits and like it's hysterical, but he actually was like really answering the questions. And I thought that was really refreshing. But he even says it. He's just like, even his friends know that he loves these ideas. Like he was talking about that idea of like his friends giving him a Staples Center suit. So he put it on at the basketball game and acted like a security, you know, like he was Staples security. And then Shaquille O'Neal saw him and said, oh, let's do a bit. And that to me is like that. That's what ignites Will Ferrell's mind was that's what he truly loves of like, oh, wouldn't this be funny? And the other thing that really impressed me about, well, not impressed me, but the thing that I related to so hard about that as an actor in LA was that I went to Groundlings because of Will Ferrell.
Yes.
Like Groundlings. I went.
Okay. That's I really wanted to talk to you about is because yeah. Like firsthand knowledge, like kind of explaining your own words.
Yeah. So Groundlings is a training ground improv comedy theater that, you know, is so successful, which by the way, the passing of Pee Wee Herman, Paul Rubens was one of the original cast members over at Groundlings. It's been around forever, but by the time I got to California or Los Angeles, that was also SNL's breeding ground where they were like choosing people because the Will Ferrell and Chris Kattan, they both went on SNL at the same time. They were in the Groundlings together. Kristen Wiig, Lisa, I mean, all of these people have come out of there. So when I remember auditioning for like, cause you have to audition to get in there, but the audition you guys is just basically like, are you crazy? Like, it's not a hard audition because they're basically, you know, you pay money to take classes there, but I took because of people like Will Ferrell. And when you're there in the lobby, you see all the photos of them on the stage and it's just like 120 seat theater. It's really nice, but it's not a huge theater and it's on Melrose, like right there on Melrose. And you have these levels. And after the first one, like you have to pass the levels, you have to get passed on by the teacher to the next level. And it gets really competitive. And I went all the way to the Sunday Company, which is the last level before you go to the main show. Oh, and that last, oh, I mean, it's because you have to wait. That last level, I had to wait for years to get into the last level because the wait list is so long at this point because everybody takes classes there. And it teaches you though, man, it teaches you how to write. Cause I'm not the strongest writer. And I remember the first, like that last level going in and getting my ass handed to me that first class. And I almost dropped. Cause I was like, and I was going through my separation at the time before my divorce. And I was like, I'm not in the headspace. I suck. I was almost about to drop. And then I said, you know what? I stay in it. And I will say it was the best experience. And I got close to getting passed on and I did. They only took two people that time. It's so hard to explain, but I will say it's the best experience.
Let's say those two people that they took, do you know them? Do we know them?
Yeah.
Like
you would know of them. You would know, like, if I said the name, you probably would, but you would be like, oh yeah. And by the way, brilliant. But I will say by the time you get to that level, everybody is brilliant. Not brilliant, but everybody has something to offer. Like it was so interesting.
You have to train. Like
that last level was like 3 months or 4 months, and you spent every day work. Like you and you would go off with writing partners. You would come on Saturday on the main class, and it would be like an 8 hour all day class. And you would put up, just your like the shittiest things of like, this is what we wrote this week. And you would see what like, okay, we can work on this or we, you know, and your teacher has been through this. So they're helping you put together, like you do two main stage performance shows and former Groundlings come. And so like the first show, I killed it. And which was great because at that first class, I was like, I fucking suck. I need out of this. And so I worked and then it's so interesting. And then the second one, I thought I had it because I initially got like three sketches in, like my first sketches back on that first class after the first performance. And I brought in three ideas. They all worked. And then, you know, when I got on stage, I could tell it wasn't landing with the crowd. Like you can hear a crowd reaction.
You feed off it's of so, it. Yeah,
it's different than podcasting because you don't know how people at home are going to like receive it, but it is so immediate on stage. And sure, there's bad audience and stuff, but at the end of the day, you know, people will laugh if something is funny or if you bring something interesting. And I remember that first show just being surprised at how great of a reaction. And that second show, it was all right. But I will tell you that. So that's what Will Ferrell went through. And I know exactly what he was talking about. And he says this, it's to Kevin and he says, Kevin, you know, like, you know, when you start, because he was saying, can you believe all the stuff you've done? Look at where you're at. He's like, yeah, but when you start, you just want one job. You just want, because people don't realize how hard it is. And they're not hard in the sense of like, well, some people have it and some people don't. It's hard to get those opportunities. It's hard to get the person to see you. It's hard to get the person to actually even see that you're talented because there are so few opportunities. It is so insane. And I sometimes question at this age if I would have still done, I mean, I probably would have still done what I did, but you know, it's a crapshoot. It's a lottery. And the thing is, so many people are insanely talented. Will Ferrell tells a story in this about his dad was a working musician. And he said, you know, from my ears,
like,
one of the best musicians I saw. And he goes, yeah, just, you know, but like, that's the deal, is that so many people are good. So it's a mixture of being really good and growing, but also the right place, the right time, the right person. I mean, that is a little similar to podcasting. It's the right person hearing you at the right time. It's the right guest. It's the right this. And that's can be maddening. And if you really think too much about it, you kind of get off the game because you're thinking about the wrong thing. Instead of just Will Ferrell going, well, I just wanted to make people laugh. I wanted to make myself laugh. You have those thoughts in your head. And he makes this point in the interview. It's like, you have those thoughts in your head of like, oh, I think this is funny. But then it only really matters when somebody else is laughing at it. You know, can it translate to an audience? Like, can that translate my idea in my head? And sometimes that, you know, it's like, it sometimes it just doesn't. I'll do even, and this is, you know, very base, but I'll do like a meme that I think is hysterical, that I'm like, oh, that's so fucking funny. Yeah. And you put it out and it's like crickets. It's like people don't, like, and it's a great,
300 likes. And I'm like, this is my best work.
It's a great training ground. It's a great training ground to try to each time crystallize your idea, like to really try to, without hitting it so hard over the head, it's that mixture of finding your voice. It's so meditative. It's so hard to explain that creative process in anything, but also when you add commerce on top of it and doing it at the level that people like Kevin Hart and Will Ferrell are doing it at. But like Will Ferrell knows, like he is so unique and not a lot of people can do what he does, but he also knows, dude, I can guarantee you there are 10 people that Will Ferrell thinks are funnier than him that don't work. That don't work. Yeah. That he's gone up with. Because if you even, and I know you said, you know, you really came upon him during Elf, but if you remember SNL, Chris Kattan was on there with him, his old buddy from Groundlings, and they did the Night at the Roxbury guys, which was really funny, the head bop. But Chris Kattan, Will Ferrell, like kept growing and growing on SNL, where he became legendary. But Chris Kattan, in the beginning, he was even more legendary. He would do these insane characters, like the little guy that would chew the apples, just like this insane stuff. And so Chris Kattan, at first, he was also projected to be the first movie breakout star from that cast, because if you remember, like he did Corky Romano, he did, and so like Will Ferrell, like
legendary.
Well, Will Ferrell did Night at the Roxbury movie. They did a movie with that, and it was fine. But Will Ferrell, you know, like that was a shared cast. But nobody would have, including Will Ferrell, predicted that he would get these opportunities.
Be the one,
Well, like old school, like he played a supporting character that was legendary, of Frank the Tank. That hit, but he was a supporting character, and that got him to Elf, that got him to, and like it's just this ascension, and then he was just ready to go because he had all of these weird ideas and funniness that was always there. It was just these opportunities, and for audiences to recognize, like, that guy's effing funny, like, holy crap. It's, I could talk about this all day because it's something that I think
that's
about.
That's why
so
I wanted
nonstop
to talk about, like, because there's a lot of episodes out now because it's the new season. And there's one recently released. But check it out. It's on Peacock, you guys. Peacock is literally worth the money. They have stopped giving it to you for free with Xfinity. But I'm sure that you guys can literally find someone's password. And if Peacock would like to give me a promo code to give away, then I will advocate for paying for it yourself. But right now, I don't have a promo code. But find someone's password. Go to this show because you just learn the most like niche things about people that you would never think about. I remember when I was watching the one with Pete Davidson in it, and he was just asking Pete about his life and his mental health. And, you know, we all know about his mental health on a wide scale, but this was like when he was dating Kim Kardashian, and he was talking about how badly he wanted a family. So it just makes people make sense a little bit more. And I'm like, this is why this guy like cannot be single, because he is looking for literally a family. But anyways, specifically with Will Ferrell, I'm like, okay, Ryan is an actor. He's in my mind, you're like a comedian, like you're a comedic actor. Then on top of that, you are a podcaster and you live in California. You know of like writers and all the people like behind the scenes of what makes something that is a machine of like a movie be what it is. So I wanted to ask you about the Groundlings. I wanted to ask you about how it related to you in general as a person, and how hilarious it was to see like Will Ferrell be serious for once, because he was answering the questions, but then he would also like be doing a bit with Kevin Hart, and he would make Kevin Hart break.
Oh yeah, see, that's what I love. I love seeing Kevin Hart laugh. I love that. But also, you know, I always think there's like levels of bits. Like the bits you see Will Ferrell do on normal talk shows are really crazy bits. He'll come out dressed down to something. He'll commit to a bit. And that's like, you know, it's almost Andy Kaufman-esque, where it's like, I'm not breaking character, I'm committing to this. But with this,
he was stripped down.
He's also that other level of funny where the dude's just funny. Of like, you know, and also there's this annoying thing in improv. A basic rule is yes and. That yes and anything. If the wine guy comes out and says, this does have good legs. Oh, good legs, medium legs. Like, he'll just be funny. He'll play off that instead of going, oh, fine. Like, or just disagreeing. Like, I don't think it has. No, it's like, yes, and keep that conversation going. Anything can be funny if you really hone in on what that other person is saying potentially. And I think that's I think about this all the time, because I'm obviously not Will Ferrell and haven't had the success, or will, I mean, at this point will have that success. But what is cool though, is all the stuff, like all that training, all the Groundlings, all that stuff, is that you do find places to use it. Like, I can use all of that in the podcast. I can use, you know, all the, if I do stupid voices or if I reenact Vanderpump scenes, that's all, like if I go off on a rant and a character voice, that's all Groundlings. That's all just go, like go to the, and also the other thing is, they always taught that I think about this every day, is mistakes are amazing. Mistakes are amazing, not just in life because we learn from them, but in the moment. If you say something so stupid, build on it. Like I once did this improv scene at Groundlings, and I remember I was in a locker room, and I had put my Space Work shirt on already after a shower.
This is what I love, because on your podcast we hear you talk about the acting school, but I don't think that we really hear you talk about like these experiences.
Yeah, well, like, see, that. No, and but I went to acting classes, which were different than Groundlings, which were more improv and sketch based. So there were two different schools. But I remember putting a shirt on in this scene, like the, you know, but then I put on deodorant. I put on deodorant and I'd already put my shirt on. And that was a mistake that I didn't even think about. And the teacher goes, because I kept going like, oh, and the teacher goes, no, like use that. You made a mistake, but then go like, oh, sorry, I just like to be doubly protected. Yeah, I love you. You know, like, you know, you think that, you know, you think deodorant just works on your skin. It works on your clothes. Like, use that mistake. Like, those are the gifts that life gives you, or a scene can give you. If you make a mistake, that can sometimes help things so much in a scene. It can be so funny if you just roll with that and not be embarrassed and apologize and say, oh my God, I fucked up. No, those are, that's what that kind of stuff trains you to do. And just the joy, you know, I've done so much serious acting in my day, which is like hard to believe, but the joy that you get, not just from making people laugh, but watching other people on stage that make you laugh, there is some kind of unspeakable joy that you get from, it's like that feeling as a kid, that kind of like, oh, we're playing, you know, like we're playing. And at the end of the day, this is fun as hell. And that's the kind of thing. If you can tap into that joy, other people want to go there with you. They want a stupid laugh. And I don't mean they want to laugh at something stupid, but they want to just like, if you're being silly, they want to laugh at something silly. They want to laugh at, I don't know. That's, I can't speak high. You know, it was just such a great experience that I got to go through. And it was also hell. Like it wasn't easy. Like it was, those kind of training programs are really hell, but it's like, at the end of the day, you see what they churn out. And I will say
Brown, like Maya Rudolph, a whole bunch of different
people. Oh yeah, God. And going back. I mean, Phil Hartman, rest in peace. Edie McClurg, who just did some amazing little parts in like John Hughes films, but you would know her immediately. There was such a, I mean, for decades now, this place has churned out some really amazing things. And it's just fun. I mean, it's like, what a cool experience. So it's always great to hear somebody like Will Ferrell, what a heavy hitter. And also the other thing about the Will Ferrell thing I loved was that he just says, like, he doesn't play, you know, Kevin said, like, you don't play into that Hollywood shit. You don't play, like, you never hear
you're about. So cheap.
And you, like, well, but also you never hear cheating scandals with Will Ferrell. You never hear. Yeah. And he just said, you know, that's the other thing is that, like, you can choose not to play the game. Will Ferrell just wants to work. He just wants to laugh and do his stupid ideas. You know, he's like, I thought this idea, I just want to do these ideas. But at the end of the day, you don't have to play into it. If you don't want to go out of the pot, just don't go to the clubs. Don't go to this. And he said, oh yeah. He goes, I know my family's proud of me. My kids and my wife, I know they're proud of me. Like, I know that. Like, but we don't really talk about it a lot. Like I'm there if they need me. And like, that's the thing. It's like, this is his work. Like, this is a craft, like anything else. And he's trying to have the best time he can. But at the end of the day, it's a craft. And then his life is his life. It's not, you know, it's different. Like, Kevin Hart is even different in that. There's all this, you know, like, there's been cheating scandals in the past with Kevin Hart. There's been
around
like,
it.
You know, it's just like he's just doing. I find it really refreshing at the end of the day with Will Ferrell to have that.
He lets his work speak for itself because he's also not the kind of guy that would want things, you know, his private life to be leaked like that in general. I think that was interesting to just see because he is private in that way to, you know, get his perspective on like how it was coming up and how he got there. So that was just fun to see and something that I wanted to talk to you about. And any final thoughts on that? Or no, do you watch Heart to Heart usually? Like,
I don't. You know what? Like, you know, Kevin Hart, like, I know he's a G. Like, I will say, I one time went to a benefit before, and this was like, Kevin Hart was already hugely successful and famous. This has got to be like 8 or 9 years ago. It was like, it was one of Seth Rogen's first benefits for Alzheimer's back in the day. And I got this, and it was like wild because there was no like schedule to perform. It was like, and then it turned out like the Backstreet Boys performed, and like Kevin Hart came out and did a surprise set. And it was so off the cuff and funny that I was shocked that I was like, it was live. And I was just like, this dude, he just came. He was like, just driving out here from a backyard. And like, he was talking about his kids and stuff. And I just thought, how insane that is to be able to make a theater. Like, he probably woke up that day, didn't know he was actually even going to come. Right. And to then by the night be in front of a whole room of, and to make the whole crowd laugh, because at times, to be honest, I've not been a huge fan of Kevin Hart's like film work. But I will say when I watch Kevin Hart's comedy, there is something I watched this, I don't know if it was a documentary or something, but it was talking about his rise and where he came from. And I think it was Philadelphia potentially. And I was just, and I was just blown away.
He just like his upbringing to launch him and his pain, literally Laugh at My Pain is one of his specials, but the way he uses that to like, just make us laugh, but also it is a therapy to him. I have always like really loved him as a comedian more so than a comedic actor. With his role,
well, because he's the brand. He's the brand. Like it's like, and he's got his hand in like 10 different things. He's got his hand in
like the LOL Network. He's like on Roku channel.
He had like a serious channel for a while. Like he had all of it, and it, like, and I watched that too. what was it? Well, oh, I watched it. No, I did watch a documentary about him where he was taking production meetings and he was doing a remake of Uptown Saturday Night, the film. And he was meeting with in this, oh gosh, rest in peace, Black Panther. Chadwick Boseman. They have Chadwick Boseman coming in to meet with him about taking the lead in Uptown Saturday Night, the remake, which I don't think ever got made, but Kevin Hart was producing it. And I remember then, like, he came in and he was so thin. And I was like, damn, like, this was before he, you know, we didn't know he was sick at all.
Yeah.
But I just said, I was like, damn, like, he must have really lost weight for a role. But I just remember, like, but even that, like, he's producing movies. He's doing this. He's doing that.
Everything.
Oh, it's like, yes, it's like Mark Wahlberg. Oh, Mark Wahlberg, when you hear his, like, workout schedule and you're like, dude, do you ever enjoy life? But Michael, that's enjoying Walmart, life.
Does he, like, he wakes up and he goes to church literally like every day?
He wait, no, no. He, oh my God. You guys got to look at, like, look up Mark Wahlberg's 24-hour workout routine. He gets up at like 3:30 in the morning. He does his prayers and meditation. Then he does his first workout of the day. And then he eats a meal and then another prayer session, then the golf course, then another workout, then another meal, then another, like, there, it's all this thing. And I looked at this, I did a whole bit. This is like years ago. I did a bit on the show about this because I thought it was, because it exhausted me. It bored me. I was like,
just okay. Like a Paltrow thing. She's like, well, I don't really eat until about 2 p.m. where does it end? And I'm what the fuck? Why does it matter? Like, are you serious?
Well, and that's it. Like, they must find extreme reward, like, love of this, or you wouldn't do it.
But discipline,
I would never, I mean, I would just fall off that wagon so hard. And, but it just, those people, and you see, they're all, Kevin Hart, so successful. Like, I mean, my God, I just sometimes think, like, if you have that many things going, I don't know, like, he can do it. I look at that and I'm like, he's a mogul. Like, that dude, Kevin Hart, if, you know, will be a billionaire one day, if not, you know, like, that dude.
Yeah, he's very close.
Well, because, you know, he went into this heart to heart with Will Ferrell. You know, there's no preparation. You know, there's no, like, somebody writes the intro and the outro and then he just has a conversation. And it's what we're doing right now. Just a conversation. And he's so funny. He gets the best guests, so of course it's going to be entertaining. Sometimes things don't have to be as hard as we make them.
Yeah, it's never like a freaking Variety. I mean, shout out to Variety, but it's not always something that's like serious, you know? Like, it's just like, how are you? How did you come up? And what is your advice for the next generation? And in between that, all those answers, you get stories, you get questions, you get reflection, you get all these beautiful things. And it was like, oh, okay, we have a shot. That's it.
That's the other thing about that I found interesting about the Heart to Heart was Kevin Hart had auditioned for SNL at one point too, because they were talking about the audition process.
He said he flopped, right?
And I've had tons of friends that have auditioned for SNL.
Have you ever thought about auditioning for SNL, or have you tried?
Oh, no. You know what? I came close once and it didn't come through, but I knew a lot of people that were on the show, like Melissa Villa Senior. I've watched SNL from, like, I've been at SNL. I've been on the stage. I've been on, I mean, like, cause that's such hallowed grounds, even though I don't find the show hysterical anymore, but, like, I don't know if I'm even should, but it was a thought, not a thought in my head at all, ever. Like, that won't ever happen in my lifetime, nor do I want it to, but it's such an amazing experience. But Kevin Hart, they show a little bit of his audition, you guys, and he does this, like, kind of, you know, and I know exactly, like, Kevin Hart, this is the perfect example.
You get where Kevin, he's coming from, but
Kevin Hart did a really super niche sports star Kevin Hart did. And you see a little bit of the audition and what he's saying isn't funny. But Kevin Hart is so committed with his, like, face and his, like, and the thing was, like, the problem with me sometimes is I will, like, he commits so hard because he knows the writing, what he's saying isn't funny, but he commits so hard that you're like, okay, this isn't funny, like the things he's saying isn't funny, but he's making such a strong choice that you're like, that's why he's famous today, because he made it. But of course, SNL wasn't going to cast him off that. But it was still enough where he didn't embarrass. Like, that wasn't embarrassing. But I would have, if I did that, I would have. You would have seen a totally different thing. You would have seen me bail on the premise. You would have been like, "Oh, this sucks." You would have seen me halfway through realize that it wasn't landing. You would have seen, like, that's the thing that I struggle with. But it was great. It was great to see that. And by the way, you can see a lot of SNL auditions, like,
that's
on YouTube.
I was gonna tell
you
people, just look up people's auditions. They're available for free. Study them if you guys ever want to, you know, audition, get that chance. My actual question for you is, like, how do people, because it's not like something you can apply to. You gotta know someone that knows someone, right? Like, how do people even get to audition for Lorne Michaels?
So it's like a couple different ways. Like, you know, like Kevin Hart was a stand-up. So they'll do stand-ups, like they'll do recommendations. Like Bill Hader got recommended through Megan Mullally. So that was a recommendation, but Bill Hader was doing extreme characters and like stand-up, kind of a stand-up sketch comedy showcases. But it'll usually, like, I knew the guys on Beck Bennett and Kyle Mooney. They used to do a sketch group called Good Neighbor, and it was four dudes, and they were doing all these online videos that were hysterical. You can still find them, Good Neighbor, and so funny. And that got passed on eventually to them, where Lorne Michaels and the casting in SNL found them. And then they set up a showcase at Improv Olympic. I remember this, set up a showcase, like, you know, for people to come watch. And there was a couple other groups on that showcase. And then Lorne, his staff, came and watched it. And the thing about Good Neighbor was four dudes. They took three of them. One of the guys, Dave McCary, he's now married to Emma Stone. They took three of the guys. The one guy they didn't take. So imagine being four-person sketch comedy group.
Destiny's Child.
They took three of the people. One they did not take. Like that. I mean, just talk about. I mean, he's gone on to have a decent, and he's hysterical.
Yeah, but
like,
for the rest of your life, you always wonder, like, why was it me?
Well, okay. Well, I mean, this is another in SNL. Casey Wilson, who you bitch sesh. She was on SNL, and now we were in the same.
So ridiculously funny.
Oh yeah, we were in the same. Well, like she was in my Tuesday night acting class before I was in it, so I knew, of course, of Casey at that point because she had been on. She was on SNL, and I knew she had taken classes over at Leslie's. So I remember her. She came back in after she had been let go from SNL, and she was working. Like she was like she had done Happy Endings, obviously. So she had already picked herself back up. But she went in and she came in and told, because it was only like 13 of us in that class. And I remember she came in and we just talked about stories, and she would tell us some of those SNL stories, and they just seemed so brutal. Like, imagine, like, it's Casey Wilson, who's like, I never landed. And she's like, and it was like each week, like there's like a pressure behind it. And, you know, for every Kristen Wiig that launches,
all that time trying to perfect these freaking sketches, and then you have to throw like improv in there. Like,
I
just looked at the schedule for how they do stuff for SNL, and it's insane.
Yeah, they still do all night sessions. They still do, like, you know, it's that eventually will have to change eventually if they want to really bring it into like the new. But Casey Wilson, though, she's like one of my shining examples of, I think, you know, like, it'll never be like, oh, what if, like, because she never got huge because of SNL. She got huge after SNL. She got huge because she's Casey Wilson. She got huge. Like, she still will show up in movies and TV, bitch sesh, obviously. You know, just, I think, will always be working. And like, I read her book last year. I love that. Like, I mean, this is a shining example of, just because SNL, even if you make it, but you have the miserable time there. Like, Melissa Villaseñor was there for 4 years. She chose not to come back last season because it got too much for her. Melissa's a real sensitive soul. I've worked with her a lot, and I think she's a genius, and I think she will continue. Like, but she was like, this isn't good for me. Like, this isn't healthy for me. And there is that, these people are so talented that if they keep going back and making good decisions for themselves, they can find roads. You know, the what ifs in the world will always be there. And I have a couple what ifs myself, but it doesn't, you know, you usually wind up to the place that you're supposed to be if you can get out of your own way.
Hell yeah. What's for you will not miss you. like at all. That's what I love to say. Well, my mom loves to say it. And I'm trying to start to believe it. So, I mean, just work hard. And just like you said, like with these different like you train, it's like a combination of like talent, but also training, but also luck. So you're going to be in the right place at the right time when that time is like right for you. And that happens like to all of us. And I think you've seen that with your podcast and maybe even with your acting career at some point. You're like, wow, if I never got, you know, taken away from this on, I would have never did that. Or, you know, it's just weird to see how things come about. But I love Heart to Heart. I think that more people should start watching it. I brought you on to talk about Will Ferrell because Will Ferrell does not do interviews like these. I've never seen him stripped down. And, you know, they were just drinking wine and he was honest about everything that happened. And he's one of my comedy idols. Like, I know him as the guy from Elf, but he's just so much more than that, obviously. Step Brothers and Anchorman. Like, I just sit here all day just naming lines from his movies. But it was great to talk to you about that. It's great to get that insight on the Groundlings school in general. And I appreciate you for talking to me. I'll be talking to Brian like probably two more times in next few weeks. So just continue to listen to the pod. Listen to Ryan So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. He has a lot of good things coming, like good guests, including me and Aaron. Yeah. And, you know, thank you for Jay, who was able to join us to talk about Barbie, which is what I want to talk about the most. Because, and it sounds like ignorant to some people, but if you're listening to this, it's probably not ignorant to you. Like, I'm just really into movies, music, and just, like, behind the scenes. And I just feel like movies is back. And just thank you for coming. Let the people know where they can find you. And we'll end this blow pod.
Thank you, Kaya, as always. And yeah, So Bad It's Good podcast and Instagram, So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey, and YouTube, if you want to see some of the videos or some of the recaps, those are on YouTube at our channel over there. And then finally, our Patreon, patreon.com/SoBadIt'sGood. I'm doing solo recaps of the new Roni over there, which has been really fun. And we have a lot. I mean, at this point, our Patreon has like close to 400 episodes that has never seen the light of day on the main feed. So you can go back and listen to me really, you know, from a place where I sucked as a podcaster to where I'm just medium bad now. So that's all there to document. So that's all there. If you want to spend like $5 a month, you can get all that stuff, which is just, it's minutes of entertainment for your listening enjoyment.
And also just for no reason at all, shout out to Maritza. I love her.
We love Maritza. Yes, I'm going to see her tomorrow. Actually, well, this is an exclusive. Seeing her tomorrow, we're going to go to get my first Botox. We're gonna film it. Some place in Gilbert, Arizona.
No, like on your body. Like, are you doing sweat glands? Or are you doing like actual?
No,
like,
no, can't not, dude. The sweat glands would have to be about,
like, oh, you're always like, oh, I'm so sweaty. Like,
Okay, yeah. But I heard like the Botox, you have to get it the places you sweat, and that would be my whole body. So I don't have that kind of money. So I'm going to like, so I'm first off, it's going to be a conversation. I'm going to say, hey, what should we do? And then I'm going to take that into advisement. But I think like right around the eye area right here, I think, okay. I don't know. I'll see what she says.
Yeah. Don't go too far because I feel like you have like this silver fox potential. Right. And if you literally start with the fucking fillers and Botox, you're going to fuck that up. But around the eyes,
what about a fake chin like Stassi Schroeder?
No, definitely go for that. I think that would fit you like perfectly. By BravoCon, you can look like a handsome squid.
Yeah, by the way, it'll heal by BravoCon, you guys. That'll be exciting.
Okay, it'll heal by BravoCon. All right, well, thank you guys for listening. I'll talk to you whenever I talk to you. Love you. Bye.
Bye.